I kind of said that after the game. Like, you can't be fooled by the stat lines for either of those two guys, because just their presence out there and them being in the right spot every single time makes a big difference as far as spacing goes. Allows for the timing of plays to kind of flow in rhythm. And, you know, we had a lot of good things go our way in the passing game, but no sacks. Obviously, has a lot to do with the offensive line, but another part of the sacks is, you know, everybody on the same page. You know, I don't feel like we had many plays where, you know, 10 guys, 9 guys doing it right and one or two guys are not doing it right. And, you know, you got to give credit to those guys for the way they prepared. They're pros. They've been played a lot of football at a high level, so I wasn't surprised, but definitely helps with the passing game when everybody's in the right spot every single time.
Aaron Rodgers talking about MVS and about Adam Thielen, who we had Ray Fittipaldo on. He kept calling him Thielen, which made me confused. And then I thought Ray was right, but Ray was wrong. So he was talking about Adam Thielen and MVS there. And kind of taking a shot at Roman Wilson. I'm going to just go out there on a limb. When you're talking about now you got all the guys on the same page and in the right spot, and the guy who gets benched is Roman Wilson, it doesn't take an Einstein to figure out he's probably talking about him. Doesn't mean it's only him. I think there's something to that. And you asked, one of you asked the question of Carter, if you thought that we'd see Roman Wilson again this season. I think it's so long as they're healthy in the wide receiver room, I don't think we're going to see him again.
Nope.
No, I don't think so either. And part of me wonders if, like, this influx of new blood, right, even I include even Darnell in that, from a Jonnu, Darnell, in terms of just they're getting more reps and at-bats in Pittsburgh. I mean, even Freiermuth getting kind of moved out. I mean, I think over the years they've had a lot of guys doing their own thing on offense. And when Rodgers was talking about guys being in the right spot, it's not just the primary receiver, right? It's everybody. You know, if it's cover two, and, you know, I'm running a seam route, and my job is to occupy a near safety, and I know that he's kind of hedging towards me, I still got to hump it so I can open up the perimeter throw or the deep dig behind. And I think, you know, a lot of guys, young players that play in an offense that's not good and really ad lib to make plays, which George Pickens did, Freiermuth has been big on scramble drills, they can lose details. And Aaron Rodgers, to me, the frustration you see from him between plays is all about detail. And I think the straw that broke the camel's back, if I had to guess, was when he missed Roman Wilson and Roman Wilson showed frustration to Rodgers, like, you missed me. That was it, man. That was it. And I think he's like, dude, I'm not playing with this guy. He'll say I love him and all this stuff, but, like, you're gonna,
who are you?
You're gonna run the wrong route.
He's not gonna help us win.
You're not gonna help me win, man. Yeah. I need you to be here.
I have found in 13 games that Rodgers has been terribly misunderstood from a on-field leadership standpoint. Last year was, he wanted to control everything. Sure, I think that's a natural human instinct. And if you're going to give somebody the opportunity to, fire the coach he doesn't get along with, and you're going to take his opinion as gospel, he's going to do it. But I think he wants to win. And it's just like me driving on the highway, Dor. I don't let anybody drive on the highway. We always make fun of me for it. I like to be in control. He wants to be in control.
Yep.
Because he thinks he gives them the best chance to win. Exactly right.
And he has won.
And all this stuff the Jets, oh my God, Rodgers was the problem. No, he wasn't. Look at them.
People are allowed to grow and change and evolve, too.
I don't even think he has. I'm sure he has, I guess, but I don't think he was ever a problem.
My opinion on him is, we talked in the offseason, I thought the dude was an enigma. And
you've shifted a lot.
I still thought he was the best option for them. And we'll stick to that. We can go back and check the tape, make sure I'm not lying.
Now we burn all that.
But good. But I was very curious to see how it would work. And I find myself watching every presser he does.
Yep.
I'm on the couch literally watching the game Sunday. And I'm like laughing in between plays when he's talking to John Harbaugh about calling a timeout on the one goal line situation because they weren't lined up right. and he was MFing the other sideline. And I'm like, this dude's in complete control. And like, you know, when you see somebody that just does it at a different level
yep.
than everybody else,
mm-hmm.
Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, right? Complete mastery of the position, understanding his limitations at his old age, right? But also able to do things that no one else can do in his own unique way. And I do think, though, that like their best chance to win is to give him control. Their best chance to win
I'm with you.
To this point has been that. They haven't necessarily always done it. Certainly going forward, it's the only path to being competitive in the playoffs is to let him control things. And if that means audibling from run to run, well, guess what? He's got the best damn view of it up there. And your offensive coordinator's on the sideline anyway. He's not upstairs seeing things from a bird's eye view. He's depending on other people. And I think they have a trust. But if he wants to go no huddle and snap the ball because he's concerned it wasn't a catch on the sideline, let him go.
Mm-hmm.
Let him go run a play. Let him go snap it and throw it deep. I don't care. Second and 10 is better than a second and 10, 30 yards back. So I give more damn control moving
yes.
forward.
Yes. And I mean, I think he's got his fingerprints all over MVS and Adam Thielen being here. And I'm interested in seeing how that grows because you got to have pros out there. People were killing Rodgers last year because he and Garrett Wilson, they didn't seem to get along. Maybe Garrett Wilson wasn't in the right damn place.
Well, I mean, it's a weird dynamic for wide receivers at times whenever you're smart enough to know the offense and then you're smart enough to know that you're not getting the ball and to actually run full speed and to run the route and the concept, because the concept is built off of, just like Pat was describing, like say you're running a seam route and you have to break it across the near safety's face, like, and you know you're not going to get the ball. It's a weird dynamic of like, I know I'm not getting the ball, so why am I running full speed? And I think that might have been the case a little bit with a young player like Roman Wilson. He's like, I'm not going to get the ball, so why am I just being a decoy the whole time? But you have to be.
Yep, it was definitely the case with Pickens, too.
But you know that Adam Thielen's going to run full speed.
Yep.
You know that MVS, he understands the concepts, is going to run full speed. And just to take somebody away from the other throw,
yep.
that's the difference right
understanding
there.
Understanding your place in,
yeah.
in the concept, in the route, understanding that you doing your job at a high level, regardless of whether you get the football or not, is going to make the play successful. Because if I'm running a clear out and I run half speed, well, guess what? Now the safety can cover two guys.
Yep.
Right? Safety can squat play two. If I have to clear out a corner and we're running a deep cross or running an inside, you know, sail route, and I just loaf it because I know I'm not getting the ball outside because it wasn't press bump.
Right.
So it's off coverage and I have to run deep and I loaf it. Well, the corner can midpoint then and pick the pocket of the sail route. You can play two guys. And that's why, you know, you see Aaron Rodgers checking the ball down. Well, it's not because he wants to always check it down. It might not be a clear picture. And you no wonder why the guy's got the best touchdown interception ratio maybe in the history of the league. It's because when it's not clear, he don't throw it. And he checks it down. And clear to him is like a 2-foot opening, right? That's all he needs to complete the ball. Yeah, I mean, that's why they waited on him. And that's why, to me, it's like, you waited on this because you knew you wanted this dude to drive the ship. Let him drive the ship. And till the wheels come off. As ships don't have wheels. The truck. The car.
We've been screwing up analogies all morning.
I was going to say, you don't drive a ship, you sail a ship.
Not necessarily.
All right, big hockey news today. It was right at the top of the show that we started talking about this, Donnie, because we were in the middle of Steelers stuff when Limits rang the old breaking news bell. And that is Kyle Dubas has traded Tristan Jarry to the Edmonton Oilers. In return, the Penguins get goalie Stuart Skinner, defenseman Brett Kulak, and a second-round pick in 2029. My God, Limits will be 30 by then. What else? Did the Penguins get or did the Oilers get some? Oh, Sammy Poulin, right?
Yeah, Sammy Poulin and Jarry go back to Edmonton.
There we go. So here to talk about that, help us interpret all this, give it meaning, is the one and only Sean Gentile of The Athletic. He's been covering football since back in the days where Mulsey had hair. Sean, how are you?
Where's Cabale this time? Are we gonna surprise him with my appearance like I did a couple weeks ago?
I heard about this.
That was a great roundtable, yeah.
There's actually been two funny Gentile-Cabali interactions as guests.
Really?
We had one in the afternoon. I don't know if you remember this one, Sean. You were on the video feed. It was a solo Malzi show. And this is something that it might even be a tip to any producer listening or, you know, even Austin here. Sean and Malzi are talking back and forth. Cabali hooks up to the video. It takes Sean out of the picture. And all we see is Cabali's gigantic mug on the screen.
Honestly, I think we had the same exact thing happen before with Cabali.
His face takes up two screens. That's why. How are you, Sean?
I like, breathe like Darth Vader.
You really got to work hard to swap out my head for someone with a bigger head, but you managed it with Cabali. He's got to be beat.
Even Malzi couldn't do that. What do you make of the trade?
It's a great trade for Pittsburgh. It's a total no-brainer. I think in a vacuum, I would maybe rather have Stu Skinner than Tristan Jarry, honestly. They're really, really similar. I think you could pretty credibly just call Jarry like the Eastern Conference version of Stu Skinner. So I'm not 100% sold on them downgrading there just in a strip hockey sense. Second round picks, great. Brett Kulak is a defenseman who I can imagine them flipping at some point too for at least something else. You get out from under the rest of Jari's contract. Yeah, it's a pretty easy slam dunk for Dubas there.
And Sean, I feel like this trade means even more for the young goaltenders here. Like, it doesn't really mean that much about Stuart Skinner, who has an expiring deal. It means more about the guys that were behind Jarry.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is about Masharov, and it's about Silov, and it's about, you know, getting those guys a larger portion of the net. Absolutely. So, we all know how volatile that position is. I don't think anybody knows which of the four goalies that we're talking about is going to be better for the rest of the season, right? Like Skinner, bad as he's been in the playoffs, you know, and as bad as he was at points earlier in the year, he's put up a .937 save percentage in his last five starts. So he's playing pretty well, and he at least gives you an option, you know, if they stay in the race and if they want to keep doing, you know, some kind of timeshare with the other two younger guys, I think he's a completely viable guy to mix in. And then you factor in, you know, Donnie, like you said, that there's no, you have no financial commitment to him beyond this season. Like, it's a total no-brainer.
Wait a second here. Doesn't this just clear the track for Mirashov, whose name, by the way, I've heard pronounced at least 17 different ways. Doesn't this just clear the track for him to play most of the games? That's what I'm thinking, Sean, or at least what I thought.
It does, but like he's been incredible. Like he's leading the AHL in save percentage, and they love him, and we all know that. But if something happens, and you know, maybe he can't handle, let's say, 42 starts down the stretch or whatever, I think Skinner's totally viable as like a backup goalie on a half decent team. Like if they need Stu Skinner, he's not that bad of an option, you know, to play games down the stretch if they're still, you know, in the playoff picture.
Okay, so how do they play it right away? Does Mirashov come up, and then what happens to Artur's shootout?
I think you bring up Mirashov immediately. I do agree with you. The issue with Silas is that he's not waiver eligible. Like he would have to pass through waivers to go down to Wilkes-Barre. So I'm sure there's some concern about losing him in that process, because he has, like, bad as he's been in the shootout. I think we can all say pretty fairly that he's shown enough glimpses over the course of the last couple months. It is going to be interesting, man. And who knows? I mean, who knows? Maybe they just try to waive Skinner. Maybe they have no interest in him. That's possible too, because it's just the nature of the position, man. Like, unless you're one of the four or five best goalies in the league, like you're dealing with a pretty high level of volatility and a pretty high level of, you know, attrition there. So yeah, I think they've got a lot of different options, and I think you could probably pretty viably make a case for any of them.
Sean, Brett Kulak is the other player they are getting back in this deal, the defenseman who has been in the league for a dozen years. And I also notice he has never not played for a Canadian team. Calgary, Montreal, Edmonton. What are the Penguins getting here in the 32-year-old?
He's just like a half-decent third-pair guy. He's, you know, played on good teams. He's played consistently, really, over the last bunch of years with all those Canadian teams. You know, he's a guy who, you know, if push comes, if they wanted to, I'm sure they could flip him for, you know, a third or a fourth at the deadline if they needed to. But he's also got some value. I you could do a lot worse having Brett Kulak kicking around on a third pair or as your seventh defenseman. Like he's a useful NHL player. Edmonton's defensive group honestly isn't that bad. They have enough guys there where, you know, they could afford to move someone like a Brett Kulak. So yeah, I'm not surprised to see him come back. I think he's, you know, completely passable. And if they wanted to trade him, honestly, they probably could because he fits the profile of guys that GMs like bringing in come deadline time if that's where they're at by February.
Sean, 30 seconds left. Is Jari the answer for the Oilers? Are we going to see him parading around with the cup this year?
I honestly don't. I like him and Skinner are the same guy. Like, so that's part of the reason they're like, it's so much for the Penguins is like, it's six in one, half dozen in the other, and then you get a second round pick and another potentially tradable asset on top of it. I mean, he's had good stretches in his career, but he's also a guy who's come up small in the Stanley Cup final in two consecutive years. Skinner is, and so yeah, I don't know. I don't feel any better about the Edmonton Oilers with Tristan Jarry and net than I did Stu Skinner. I'll say that much.
Sean, thanks for coming on at the last minute, man. We'll talk to you later.
Absolutely, boys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sean.
Sean Gentile, what a man he is. For one night and one night only, Wednesday, December 17th, our Odyssey Pittsburgh stations, The Fan, 100.1 FM, AM 1020 KDK, 100.7 The Star, WAMO 107.3 and Y108. We'll all be at Mike's Beer Bar, turning it into the biggest Christmas karaoke spot on the North Shore. On-air hosts, local celebrities take the mic for celebrity karaoke. No admission costs, but bring canned food donations to support North Hills Cares. Details at 937thefan.com. 50-minute mark on The Fan. Brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township. And The Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And yes, it's cold. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Lager, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Passing flurries today with a high of 32. That's Franco, of course. We just had another $1,000 donation right here at the baseball card castle. Tell us who this man is. He's a friend of the general. Richard, correct? Is that right, Limits?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Richard. You're a very generous man. Love that. Thank you. A big golfer, yes. Let's do that.
You're Grove getting City invites Country. Left and right,
I've gotten
Joe.
two invites even as we speak. Thank you, sir. I will be. We're supporting the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. This holiday season, bring non-perishable donations out here at the Card Castle. Man, the minute you walk in, you walk right back into your childhood. So much cool stuff here. Donate online at pittsburghfoodbank.org/need. Text need to 50155. Donnie, it's time for a two-minute drill. It's a two-minute numbers game, my friend, and I sure hope you're ready. Things are moving fast at the Baseball Card Castle. Sean Myers, we need some music. It's time for the numbers game, the intergalactically acclaimed numbers game. Donnie, you have a number for me?
I'll hit you with one, Joe.
I bet you will.
Because I don't have many numbers, so I'm glad we're only doing a two-minute warning for this. But my number for this is zero, and it's something I brought up to you earlier in the show. That is the amount of wins that Tua Tagovailoa has when it is colder than 40 degrees. That's remarkable to me.
It really is.
Because, first off, 40 I wouldn't say is cold. I would call that chilly.
Yeah.
More than anything. It was 42 degrees at kickoff last week at MetLife Stadium, and they bulldoze the hapless Jets.
I think it's
going to be in the teens on Monday night.
I got one, and it's another zero. Matt Moore's sensibilities are what were left of them after Bud Dupree broke him in half in a playoff game. One of the great hits in Steeler history. Right?
I was at that game, Joe. I feel like Ron saying that. But
wow.
That's one of the loudest hits I've ever heard. I put that and the Ryan Clark hit on Willis McGahee.
Oh, yes.
Like one and two.
You got a number for me?
Three.
Yeah.
The total points scored in the infamous Mud Bowl Monday night football game in 2007. Joe, a 3-0 win for the Steelers because of a field goal from Jeff Reed with about 15 seconds to go in the game.
I got a number for you, Donnie. 64. If the Steelers don't get more than 7 points in the first quarter, they will have gone 64 games without doing so. That will set the franchise record for that particular category from the 1940s. And I guess they excluded the Steagles and Card Pitt from that, or Pitt Card, whatever it was called. Donnie, what is going on here? 64 games without more than 7 points in the first quarter? Are you kidding me?
I mean, I'm just happy when they score like an opening drive touchdown.
Or a field goal.
If they get through the first quarter with 7 points, it feels like a win to me.
If either one of you, by the way, can mention who holds that record, most games in a row in NFL history without scoring more than 7 points in the first quarter. If you, either one of you can name that, I'm taking you both out to a steak dinner at a place of your choice. Donnie,
would you like to go first?
You don't even have to give me the era, just the team. Don't look at my computer screen. Cheating.
I didn't see it.
Yes, you did.
I honestly did not.
I'll go with the Vikings.
I'm going to go with the Cardinals.
The Brooklyn Dodgers from 1930 to 37 with Roy Campanella playing quarterback.
You're not counting runs, right, Joe?
Donnie, no.
They probably have a playing card from somebody on that team in this building.
He was their legendary catcher. My dad used to go watch Campanella, Jackie Robinson, Pee Wee Reese, all those guys. Donnie, you're up. You got a number for me?
Four.
Yeah?
One reception for 4 yards last week. Adam hooked on a Thielen.
Or on a Thielen, according to Ray.
And he could be their key player Monday night. Ray calling for a touchdown in the game.
I have an unbelievable number for you. In fact, it's a two-pack, Donnie, and it starts with a two. Two grandfathers who have ever played quarterback in the NFL. Phil Rivers will be one, it looks like, maybe this weekend. Who's the other?
I know who it is. It's Brett Favre.
You're exactly right, but this number's even better. And Limits, I think you'll enjoy this one. 59. That is Phil Rivers' speed rating on Madden. They just put it out. He is 83 for power throws, I guess, 86 for accuracy, and a 59 for speed.
That's great.
That actually seems a little bit high.
That's what a couple people said.
The other thing is, the other reason why I give him some sort of prayer to play okay, he was never great on his feet.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not as if he was some sort of dual threat guy.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
like
just
how
stand
how
back
Ben
there.
Could move around. Rivers was never a guy.
I'm rooting for him. I love this story. If he plays this weekend, I'm watching that game with
absolutely
no doubt.
And, I mean, the rough thing for them and for him, they play some of the best defenses in football down the stretch here. They have Seattle on Sunday. They have San Francisco after that. They have Houston after that.
It could get real ugly.
If 44-year-old Philip Rivers and 42-year-old Aaron Rodgers ran a 40-yard dash, he would be faster.
Oh, my goodness.
I think Rodgers. He did score a touchdown last week.
Do you think either me or Limits could beat them in a 40?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
I think Limits could beat both. Is Limits faster than you?
I don't know. That's something that I've wanted to do that with Limits at high
really?
School. At a high school football
what a video
game.
That would
at
be.
At some point.
100-yard dash on a football field in full football equipment? That would be incredible.
I always had a pretty good 10 and 20-yard split. We'll have to see about the 100.
Joe, could you imagine putting a helmet and pads on me and what I would look like?
You'd look like Boswell.
I'd look like Easton Stick.
You couldn't.
Would be a stick figure.
Joe, here was something that, of course, people got up in arms about the other day that Pony threw out there on Twitter because we were talking about it during a break. If, I know it's a huge if and it's not going to happen, if Philip Rivers at 44 years old, who took 5 years off from football, actually led and played a big part in the Colts winning the Super Bowl, does he pass up Big Ben all time?
Oh, man, is that a great question.
I say yes.
For that feat in particular, you might be right.
He would be down 2-1 in Super Bowls, I get that. But It's not as if he's some slouch of a player. I mean, the guy is going to be in the Hall of Fame as is at some point. And he would be doing something truly unprecedented.
We have to go. I think I would agree with you. I got one more number for you. 142. That's Jordan Brooks, Miami, leads the NFL in tackles. And one more, 2.5. Number of sacks Miles Garrett needs to tie the NFL record in sacks held by Strahan and Watt, correct?
I think he's going to shatter it.
Man. All right, who won, Sean? What was your favorite number?
I like the grandfather one, so I'm going with that one.
Thank you.
That was
very
yours,
kindly.
Joe.
Coming up, Nick Costos. I don't even remember if I won my latest bet with him. We'll ask him who won the bet. Do you remember limits?
No, I honestly don't.
Was it the
Buffalo
game?
We've been making such frequent bets.
Yeah, I don't know. He could actually just lie to us and win the bet. I don't know, but he's got the lowdown on all things NFL in terms of the betting. Let's go to him next. We're live at the Baseball Card Castle. Come on in. Stop by. Help the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. Get yourself a Starkey trading card.
These things are incredible, Donnie.
You've signed a few of those.
I have.
My favorite is on the back. Considers Malzi a role model.
Yeah.
Is one of the fun facts.
Yeah, that's the way they used to do cards.
The man you heard there, very soft-spoken, the rookie Derek Harmon, his return would help a lot against an ailing run defense, to help an ailing run defense. The numbers are the following. When he is not in the lineup, the Steelers give up on average 191 rushing yards per game. When he plays, it's 96. That's insane. One man should not be that important. One rookie should not be that important. One rookie that was a late first-round pick who had to get on the moving train because he started the season banged up because of what happened in a preseason game should not result in that night and day difference between pretty good run defense and god-awful run defense. Where would that rank? If the stats rushing with Harmon in all season were at 96 yards per game, where would they rank among top run defenses? And if they gave up 191 yards per game all season, where would that rank?
I'm happy to help you with this, Pony, as always. All right, yards per game, 91 you said?
No, 96.
96, I'm sorry. They'd be sixth in the league, just ahead of the Colts, just behind the Texans. Texans are fifth at 94.3. Colts, 6th at 98.6.
How about run defense? How about 191 run defense? 191 yards per game.
Dead effing last.
So when he plays
by 40, by almost 40 yards. The Bengals are the worst in the NFL at 155.5 a game.
Jeez. So when he plays, they're a top 10 run defense, and when he doesn't, they are
five.
The worst by far.
When he plays, they are within 12 yards of the number, or 13 yards of the number one team in the league in that department, the Jags, at 83 a game.
Yeah.
When he doesn't play, they are 35 yards worse than the worst team in the league, the Bengals. That is jaw-dropping.
I'm going to say something about...
He should be the Steelers' rookie of the year on that. I'm not kidding. He should almost be the Steelers' most valuable player on that stat alone, one of those you don't know what you got till it's gone situations.
I'm going to make a comment, and... I think it's hard to argue this, but you guys can try. I have been someone that's been very vocal and adamant that one of Tomlin's biggest problems here is that he has too much power, that he has too much say, that in addition to being the coach, he also wants to be the de facto GM, and he wants a hand in all personnel decisions, and he believes because of his football knowledge and football brain and football experience that he can coach the team, he can manage the team, he can pick the players, he can sign the players, he can trade for the players, all of those things. But I have to concede one thing. Since Kevin Colbert left, their draft arrangement with Tomlin teaming up with Khan and Andy Weidel coming over from the Eagles to set their draft board, they've been much better at it. And I like Kevin, and I think Kevin is a borderline Hall of Fame GM. He won two Super Bowls. But look at their three drafts here without Kevin since he's retired, since the Pickett draft. You can't tell me. Look at the last three with Kevin, and look at the first three with Omar as technically the GM. This is way better.
I think that they have done a better job. They've definitely changed sort of the identity of what kind of a player they're going to go and get after. And if a guy like Broderick Jones hadn't been such a struggle, and then this year when he was getting, I would say just, and I'm being generous here, a little bit of traction under him a little bit. He wasn't, after the first game of the season, like a complete void over there. You'd feel even better about this. I just think they've started to go after different kind of players. I think that in Kevin's case, here's what I would say about Kevin. Obviously did a very good job for very many years. The Watt first-round pick, though, was the last one before a run of very underwhelming first-round picks and very questionable decisions. I think there's an actual good thing here with separation of church and state in this way. Andy is the I know Mike likes to scout everybody, too. So Mike functions as a de facto scout, right? Omar is the more analytically minded. What's positional value have to do, right, with everything? But there's a separation now. Andy sets the board, works with the scouts, also does the scouting himself, makes the board.
Yep.
Omar then, based on the board, is going to give you positional value. Mike is going to be involved with all of it, but I've heard enough about Mike not getting his way unilaterally the way people, I think, would want to make it seem, like he's this total boogeyman who just stomps his feet and gets his way. Like, if that was the truth, Joey Porter would have been the 17th pick in the year that they took Jones and then got Porter anyway, because I know that's what Mike wanted, and they talked him out of it and convinced him they could do both. I think Mike does not step on toes as much as people think there. I think he still carries a ton of clout, but I don't think he just says, no, we're drafting this player. Damn it, that's who I want. And I think with Kevin, he would scout the players. He would fall in love with a player regardless of position. And then you'd have something that was like a double whammy of bad. And to that, I'll say, this is my example. Safety, unless you're drafting like a Kyle Hamilton type of player, is just not as valued of a position anymore as it used to be. Like, it's just not. Cornerbacks, edge rushers, defensive linemen are like the primo positions. Would you agree?
Uh-huh.
Kevin not only in one of his final five drafts, not only drafts a safety in 2018 in the first round, an already devalued position, he drafts a guy that he pretty obviously fell in love with in the process who had a third round grade on him. That would not, I don't think something like that would happen under this regime. Because of the different sort of level, I would say, of input from various sources that you're now getting. I think Kevin and Mike worked as a hive mind. And if they had a guy pegged correctly as like the right pick, and it was a TJ Watt, that worked to their benefit. And when they zeroed in on somebody that wasn't the right pick, like an Edmonds, just to use him again, there was nobody involved there to tell them, hey, guys, wait a minute. Are we sure we want to do it this way? That's how I would evaluate that and maybe break that down.
Their last five drafts, their top picks, Kevin and Mike together, were Terrell Edmonds, Devin Bush, Chase Claypool, Najee Harris, and Pickett. None of those guys got second contracts.
Devin Bush is an under... I just want to stress this about him, too, because this is another thing about positional value. Devin Bush was always, at best, an undersized off-ball linebacker that they moved up 10 spots to select.
Yeah.
Broderick Jones hasn't been as advertised yet, and it is fair to wonder. I'm saying this not happily, but openly saying this. Fair to wonder if he ever will materialize into the player they think he can be. But at least it makes sense when you move up a couple of spots to pick what you think is going to be a franchise left tackle. Like, your process there is at least sound.
But I think that draft is still deep enough and good enough where if Jones doesn't get a second contract, I still think it's a good draft. Joey Porter Jr. has come on here lately.
He has.
Benton's a starter. I think he's kind of just a guy, so I don't love that pick. Washington is really good.
Although Benton started this year looking like he was going to, you know, kind of have a bounce back.
Herbig is really a stud. You got him in the fourth round. Trice is just a bad injury luck thing. I'm not going to say good or bad pick. And you got Spencer Anderson with the 251st pick.
And you figured out a use for him.
And he has a role on your team.
Yep.
I mean, you've got 6 guys from that draft who contribute to your football team.
Fungible players
yes.
for you. Yeah.
That's a good draft.
Well, that's what good teams do in the draft. That's the bottom line.
Even if Broderick's a bust, that's a good draft.
But I don't even think he, this year, finally playing the position they intended until he got hurt. I think he had one truly atrocious game. Did you think he was playing like a bust left tackle? He was serviceable. Rodgers wasn't getting killed.
Well, I think
he delivered one of the biggest hits on Rodgers of the year. Not great.
When you draft the guy 14th, you don't expect serviceable.
But I mean, we also hold on. I'm not going to get in the weeds on this. I promise. We also know that with the way practicing changed now in the NFL, where you can't hit as much, you can't get those guys out there as much. There has definitely been a similar learning curve where quarterbacks take longer sometimes to marinate. Just that way with offensive linemen. Who else from Broderick's draft? Darnell Wright's turned into a really good tackle.
Well, I would say Fautanu missed all of last year, and he seemed to go right in and play.
He's also older than Jones.
Yeah, he is. Good point.
But, like, have you heard Jack's squad about Paris Johnson or guys like that? I haven't.
I'd have to go back and look at those drafts.
But I'm not going to get in the weeds. I just think tackles and offensive linemen can take a little longer to develop.
All right, so
now.
2 years ago, the draft.
Yeah.
Fautanu, looking good. Frazier, rock solid. Roman Wilson, horrible pick. Next pick, though. Peyton Wilson, I think good for a third-round linebacker. Mason McCormick, fourth-round guard, solid starts. So from your first five picks, you got, again, four useful players. Maybe stud right tackle and maybe a stud center, too. And I think Peyton Wilson's flashed. I think he's been up and down.
You've even had Logan Lee actually play in a game and at least give you snaps where you didn't have to go to somebody that was like off the street. I know that's minimal.
You got 60% of your starting offensive line in that draft.
Right.
It said that you had to fill all those holes. Like, that was a team mistake and failure before that draft that you needed to find three guys.
Started to do a better job with it. Then this year it's Harmon, who we've gone over all the stats. Caleb Johnson looks like a terrible pick right now, but don't worry, there was that whoosh at camp.
Yep.
Jack Sawyer looks like he's going to be a solid rotational piece. Is that a fair descriptor? Y.A. Black, I think, has come along. I saw him get put on skates once against the Ravens. I also saw him detonate a couple people and almost like swallow Lamar Jackson like some sort of hippopotamus. And then Will Howard, who knows? Carson Bruner, they're going to tell you, and frankly, I'm going to agree.
He's a very good special
teams
player.
They feel like they have found a future core special teams Killebrew-type ace with the 226th pick, and they and I will tell you that that is a perfectly acceptable use of a guy where 225 players went before him.
Yeah. So whatever is the arrangement, I mean,
I think
Tomlin still has a lot of sway, but with this sway and with this the way it works, it's producing much better results than it did before with a Hall of Fame GM here.
So I'm gonna make this quick connection. I think you're seeing, though, because Mike gets talked about as the draft and like the boogeyman who does all the decision making, and it's all him unless it's a good decision, in which case somebody else must have figured out a way to make it. Like, that's kind of how it goes. I think you're seeing the value in getting a new voice in there and realizing that sometimes when a guy's been on a job for a very long time, it can get stale. I just don't think Mike and Kevin ever disagreed with each other that much. I think they both tended to like gravitate towards the same kind of players because they're both more scout-oriented, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was always like, hey, do you think this is a good idea? Yeah, I like it too. Let's do it. And I think with Mike now, he's hearing from a new voice, and just that little amount of friction that Andy Weidel might have, like as far as his board and how it might line up with Mike sees it, I think at least gets a conversation started that's had them being more productive.
I kind of said that after the game. Like, you can't be fooled by the stat lines for either of those two guys, because just their presence out there and them being in the right spot every single time makes a big difference as far as spacing goes. Allows for the timing of plays to kind of flow in rhythm. And, you know, we had a lot of good things go our way in the passing game, but no sacks. Obviously, has a lot to do with the offensive line, but another part of the sacks is, you know, everybody on the same page. You know, I don't feel like we had many plays where, you know, 10 guys, 9 guys doing it right and one or two guys are not doing it right. And, you know, you got to give credit to those guys for the way they prepared. They're pros. They've played a lot of football at a high level, so I wasn't surprised. But definitely helps with the passing game when everybody's in the right spot every single time.
Aaron Rodgers talking about MVS and about Adam Thielen, who we had Ray Fittipaldo on. He kept calling him Thielen, which made me confused. And then I thought Ray was right, but Ray was wrong. So he was talking about Adam Thielen and MVS there. And kind of taking a shot at Roman Wilson. I'm going to just go out there on a limb. When you're talking about now you got all the guys on the same page and in the right spot, and the guy who gets benched is Roman Wilson, it doesn't take an Einstein to figure out he's probably talking about him. Doesn't mean it's only him. I think there's something to that. And you asked, one of you asked the question of Carter if you thought that we'd see Roman Wilson again this season. I think it's so long as they're healthy in the wide receiver room, I don't think we're going to see him again.
Nope.
No, I don't think so either. And part of me wonders if, like, this influx of new blood, right, even I include even Darnell in that, from a Jonnu, Darnell, in terms of just they're getting more reps and at-bats in Pittsburgh. I mean, even Freiermuth getting kind of moved out. I mean, I think over the years, they've had a lot of guys doing their own thing on offense. And when Rodgers was talking about guys being in the right spot, it's not just the primary receiver, right? It's everybody. You know, if it's cover two, and, you know, I'm running a seam route, and my job is to occupy a near safety, and I know that he's kind of hedging towards me, I still got to hump it so I can open up the perimeter throw or the deep dig behind. And I think, you know, a lot of guys, young players that play in an offense that's not good and really ad lib to make plays, which George Pickens did, Freiermuth has been big on scramble drills, they can lose details. And Aaron Rodgers, to me, the frustration you see from him between plays is all about detail. And I think the straw that broke the camel's back, if I had to guess, was when he missed Roman Wilson and Roman Wilson showed frustration to Rodgers, like, you missed me. That was it, man. That was it. And I think he's like, dude, I'm not playing with this guy. He'll say I love him and all this stuff, but, like, you're going to
– Who are you?
You're gonna run the wrong route.
He's not going to help us win.
You're not going to help me win, man. Yeah. I need you to be here.
I have found in 13 games that Rodgers has been terribly misunderstood from a on-field leadership standpoint. Last year was, he wanted to control everything. Sure, I think that's a natural human instinct. And if you're going to give somebody the opportunity to, fire the coach he doesn't get along with, and you're going to take his opinion as gospel, he's going to do it. But I think he wants to win. And it's just like me driving on the highway, Dor. I don't let anybody drive on the highway. We always make fun of me for it. I like to be in control. He wants to be in control.
Yep.
Because he thinks he gives them the best chance to win. Exactly right.
And he has one.
And all this stuff the Jets, oh my God, Rodgers was the problem. No, he wasn't. Look at them.
People are allowed to grow and change and evolve, too.
I don't even think he has. I'm sure he has, I guess, but I don't think he was ever a problem.
My opinion on him is, we talked in the offseason, I thought the dude was an enigma. And
you've shifted a lot.
I still thought he was the best option for them. And we'll stick to that. We can go back and check the tape, make sure I'm not lying.
Now we burn all that.
But good. But I was very curious to see how it would work. And I find myself watching every presser he does.
Yep.
I'm on the couch literally watching the game Sunday. And I'm like laughing in between plays when he's talking to John Harbaugh about calling a timeout on the one goal line situation because they weren't lined up right. And he was MFing the other sideline. And I'm like, this dude's in complete control. And, like, you know when you see somebody that just does it at a different level than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, right? Complete mastery of the position, understanding his limitations at his old age, right? But also able to do things that no one else can do in his own unique way. And I do think, though, that, like, their best chance to win is to give him control. Their best chance to win to this point has been that. They haven't necessarily always done it. Certainly going forward, it's the only path to being competitive in the playoffs is to let him control things. And if that means audibling from run to run, well, guess what? He's got the best damn view of it up there. And your offensive coordinator's on the sideline anyway. He's not upstairs seeing things from a bird's eye view. He's depending on other people. And I think they have a trust. But if he wants to go no huddle and snap the ball because he's concerned it wasn't a catch on the sideline, let him go.
Mm-hmm.
Let him go run a play. Let him go snap it and throw it deep. I don't care. Second and 10 is better than a second and 10 30 yards back. So I give more damn control moving forward.
Yes. And I mean, I think he's got his fingerprints all over MVS and Adam Thielen being here. And I'm interested in seeing how that grows because you got to have pros out there. People were killing Rodgers last year because he and
Garrett Wilson,
they didn't seem to get along. Maybe Garrett Wilson wasn't in the right damn place.
Well, I mean, it's a weird dynamic for wide receivers at times whenever you're smart enough to know the offense and then you're smart enough to know that you're not getting the ball and to actually run full speed and to run the route and the concept, because the concept is built off of, just like Pat was describing, like say you're running a seam route and you have to break it across the near safety's face, like, and you know you're not going to get the ball. It's a weird dynamic of like, I know I'm not getting the ball, so why am I running full speed? And I think that might have been the case a little bit with a young player like Roman Wilson. He's like, I'm not going to get the ball, so why am I just being a decoy the whole time? But you have to be.
Yeah, it was definitely the case with Pickens, too.
But you know that Adam Thielen's going to run full speed.
Yep.
You know that MVS, he understands the concepts, is going to run full speed. And just to take somebody away from the other throw,
yep,
that's the difference right
understanding
there.
Understanding your place in the concept, in the route, understanding that you doing your job at a high level, regardless of whether you get the football or not, is going to make the play successful. Because if I'm running a clear out and I run half speed, well, guess what? Now the safety can cover two guys.
Yep.
Right? Safety can squat play two. If I have to clear out a corner and we're running a deep cross or running an inside, you know, sail route, and I just loaf it because I know I'm not getting the ball outside because it wasn't press bump.
Right.
So it's off coverage and I have to run deep and I loaf it. Well, the corner can midpoint then and pick the pocket of the sail route. You can play two guys. And that's why, you know, you see Aaron Rodgers checking the ball down. Well, it's not because he wants to always check it down. It might not be a clear picture. And you no wonder why the guy's got the best touchdown interception ratio maybe in the history of the league. It's because when it's not clear, he don't throw it. And he checks it down. And clear to him is like a 2-foot opening, right? That's all he needs to complete the ball. That's why they waited on him. And that's why, to me, it's like you waited on this because you knew you wanted this dude to drive the ship. Let him drive the ship. And till the wheels come off. As ships don't have wheels. The truck, the car.
We've been screwing up analogies all morning.
I was going to say, you don't drive a ship, you sail a ship.
Not necessarily.
Fifty-minute mark on the Fan. We are about 10 minutes away from that. That's brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. What's cooking? That is brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Very kindly. It is a Football Friday here on 93.7 The Fan. Donnie Football with you. Austin City Limits Bechtold here as well. We are live at the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Sean Myers back behind the glass in Greentree. Our buddy Joe Starkey had an early dismissal. You can listen to this show on demand, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. That is the Pomp and Joe Show, as well as all of our shows here on 93.7 The Fan. And the Fan Hotline, that is brought to you by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. All right, guys, it is time for our pick segment. This is how we end every Football Friday, and we have a special twist on this one because Joe left us early and did not leave us with his picks. One of our great Odyssey folk here on site, Amy Mock, our promotions, events, and marketing and Director of Internal Operations. I made sure to get that entire title,
I appreciate
Amy,
that.
Because I knew it was a mouthful, your entire title. So she, Amy Mock, will be making the picks in place of Joe, and she assured us, I don't know what I'm doing.
I don't
know any of these teams.
Nope.
You know, though, sometimes that benefits people.
Yeah.
You know who does the best on March Madness brackets?
People that fill it out by colors.
People like Amy. I don't know anything going into this. You just start writing down names.
Joe trusts me.
My fiance won a March Madness poll with like 200 people in it 2 years ago. Knew nothing. She filled it out at 11:30 Thursday morning. She won.
Wow.
I finished probably in 150th place.
And we ran this by Joe, too. And Joe
yes,
is okay with it. So
we did
Joe,
check with Joe.
There's no coming back from this, Joe. And we know he's listening.
Joe, I'm sorry.
All right, Austin, you have the games. You have the records for us as well. So I will let you kick us off here.
So that makes it even more intriguing because Joe is currently in first place by a game. And Donnie, you and I are one back at 52-48 overall. Joe is at 53-47. We're just like the Steelers, just right above 500, Donnie, looking for more.
Above the mean.
Right above the mean. Let's start with the lone college football game of the weekend, the Army-Navy standalone game. Navy is favored by 6.5. Who do you like, Donnie?
I'm going to take Navy. Kind of dicey because these games always feel like they end like 12-6 or 6-3. Very low scoring, very hard hitting, very meaningful football games. But I'm going to ride with the team that I think has the two best players, and they're both Mount Lebanon kids. They are both Whipple products. I'm going to go with Navy because they have Eli Heidenreich. They have Alex Teska. I'm going to take those guys to win it and cover.
Joe, played by Amy, Army-Navy.
Army?
Going with Army.
I mean, I don't want to say the same thing that Donnie said.
She's absolutely going to win that one, too. The game's going to end like 6-0.
Because I'm going with Navy as well. I think the Lebo boys are going to play a huge factor in it for the victory. Packers are favored by 2.5 at the Denver Broncos, Donnie. I like Green Bay to further cement themselves to get the number one seed in the NFC. It would not surprise me if they ultimately make the Super Bowl. And Denver, they're going to start to come back to reality a little bit more of where they should be.
We pointed this out to Joe earlier. It upset him that Denver, yeah, they're 11-2, and he wanted to flex and tell Nick Kostos that, well, they're very close to being 13-0. Denver's also very close to being 7-6. They are a team that gets by on the skin of their teeth more often than not. They have a couple of overtime wins against pretty bad teams. I mean, Washington took them down to the wire a couple of weeks ago with a backup QB. The Jets played them to a two-point game in London, I believe. They needed a miraculous comeback to beat the Giants. After that, they've had close game after close game. They're 5-7-1 against the spread this year. So that should tell you, for a team with that good of a record, they are playing very dicey football. I know they're 6-0 at home. They're getting their first loss on Sunday because Green Bay is going to go in there and win the game by a touchdown.
Amy, are you picking the horses or are you eating cheese?
I'm not overthinking this one. Give me the Packers. Denver competes, but Green Bay has more answers when the game gets tight.
Sweep around the board. Good analysis. Bills at the Patriots. Well, we know that Joe thinks that New England's going to win. I don't. I think Buffalo is going to pull out a victory. Maybe it's because I've always been high on Buffalo just because of Josh Allen. Look, I don't like their offensive weapons at all, and their defense gives me concern. But there's something about Superman taking flight, and they're not going to lose to the Patriots twice.
New England, to me, has been a bit of a better version of what Denver is. Drake May has been the better quarterback of the two. Maybe the New England defense not quite as good as the defense that Denver has. But New England has also benefited, and this is what happens when you are a team that is in the, you know, the last place spot in your division. You benefit from playing a weaker schedule, and they have taken advantage of that because now, as they sit as the number one seed in the AFC, they have really not had to play all that good of football teams this year. One of their losses, their last loss, to the Pittsburgh Steelers in the middle of September. This is their stiffest test to this point, and I think Josh Allen is primed for a big solo performance. I know the Bills have flaws like every team in the AFC, but I'm going to take Buffalo to go in there. It's basically a pick 'em. It's a 1-point spread here. I think Buffalo wins the game.
Joe Mock, what is your pick?
I'm also going Bills. I trust Buffalo.
All right, next up, Chargers at the Chiefs. Donnie, I'm surprised by this line. 4.5 in favor of Kansas City? That feels too big of a line. They're on a roll in the opposite direction. They're under 500. I like the Chargers to at least lose by a field goal, if not win the game.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs, if last week wasn't the death nail for them, this Sunday absolutely would be. There is a way that the Kansas City Chiefs, with 3 weeks to go in the regular season after this week, there is a way they are eliminated, and they are playing meaningless football. And this is a team that has been in the AFC Championship and or Super Bowl for the better part of the last decade. They have taken the mantle from the Patriots and have become the new dynasty. One of those ways would be losing on Sunday. I don't know if they lose, but they will. They play all of these games tight as is. I felt good about Houston covering that 3.5 last week because I thought at worst it will come down to a field goal. Houston won the game outright. I feel the same way here. that the Chargers, at worst, will lose the game by a field goal. So give me L.A.
Will you jump on my Justin Herbert for MVP bandwagon that I'm currently forming right now? Will you jump on?
I like Justin Herbert, but I don't think so. I feel like
– Is he a top five quarterback?
Right now?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, Stafford, Drake May playing phenomenal football. I mean, now that Joe Burrow's back, I'd put him up there. I'd probably still put Josh Allen up there.
He's number five then.
Who is?
So that means Mahomes is below him. Mahomes is not having a good year. This is his worst season in the NFL.
Yeah, right now. Yeah, sure. Right now I would throw Herbert in there.
Amy, Chargers, Chiefs?
So I want to say Chiefs, but I feel like my son would tell me Chargers, so I'm going Chargers.
So we'll go with the Chargers. Browns at the Bears. The line is 7.5 in favor of Chicago, Donnie, as we start to go a little bit more rapid fire.
I will go with Chicago here. I know it's a scary spread to cover, but Cleveland 1-5 on the road this year against the spread. The only time that they have gotten that victory was against the Vegas Raiders. Chicago's a better team than I gave them credit for, even after a loss.
Amy?
Who?
It's the Browns and Bears.
Oh, okay. Bears. Okay, sorry. Browns.
Going with the Browns. I am going to go with the Bears, but honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if the Browns end up losing by just 7 with Shadur. Ravens at the Bengals. Donnie, give me your Cincinnati Bengals with Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I think
they beat Baltimore twice.
I think the wrong team is favored here. And there's a position that we can put ourselves in as Steelers fans where if we see a Ravens loss on Sunday and then a Steelers win on Monday, it would take a massive collapse from the Steelers and also a late rally from the Ravens for Pittsburgh to not win the division.
Yeah.
If the Ravens lose on Sunday and the Steelers win on Monday, the Ravens would have to win out to pass them up and win the North. I think Cincinnati is going to beat them by like 10 points. So even without T. Higgins, they don't need both of those stars. I'm going to go with the Bengals plus 3.
Who wins the AFC North battle between the Ravens and Bengals, Amy?
I did eeny, meeny, miny, moe on this one, and I'm going with the Bengals.
Going to go with the Bengals. So we all have Cincinnati beating the Ravens. That should help the Steelers, we'll get to in a moment. Vikings at the Cowboys. Dallas is favored by 6. You know how I feel about J.J. McCarthy, Donnie. I just don't think he's any good, and I don't think the Cowboys are that good either. But Georgie and CeeDee Lamb will combine for over 150 yards through the air against Brian Flores' defense, and Dallas will win by a touchdown.
I'm going to take Dallas, too. Kind of a big number, but people riding a bit high on Minnesota after what they did to Washington and they beat up Jaden Daniels last week. I'm not buying into it a ton. So I'm going to go Dallas here, minus 6.
Vikings and Cowboys, Amy.
I have to go Dallas. My friend Ellie works down at the stadium in broadcasting, so that's...
How about that tie-in?
Did you ever see the video of when they first opened the stadium and everybody runs in for the standing room only seats?
Amazing.
Why do they do that? So there's just like a certain amount of standing room only? Nobody does that to run to the rotundas.
You want to get your best spot.
Maybe it's that high priority of a spot in Dallas. Finally, the Miami Dolphins come to Pittsburgh. With the spread now at 3, Donnie, it has moved down with T.J. Watt not expected to play. I do like the Steelers in this game. I would have had a different pick if the Steelers would have lost to Baltimore, especially for the first half. They pushed around the Ravens. Ravens had better fight, especially in the fourth. But with the defense able to hold on, I don't think the Dolphins are all that good. And in the cold weather, which I think is a factor. People try to undersell it sometimes. Oh, does it really matter with Tua? Yes, it does. I have the Steelers winning it by a touchdown, 27-20.
Yeah, I think it's a silly stat about Tua being 0-5 when it is 40 degrees or below, but it's one that I buy into, and it is going to be in the teens on Monday night. Very, very cold. I don't think that plays into his favor. They can run the football, but if they can take Devon Achane out of the game, Miami won't really have much to go for on Monday night. I think the Steelers can win this game by 7-10 points, so I will take them here to cover minus 3.
I have to go with the Steelers.
Everyone picks the Steelers.
I don't know how that helps Joe or doesn't help Joe or what Joe would say, but, you know.
Did anybody think 1 week ago that we would be picking the Steelers to win this game? Because I thought the sky was falling, they lose to Baltimore, and then this game would be maybe a lot of fire so-and-so chants and boo birds for renegade again, and it seems like what a difference 1 week makes.
And now they're in the driver's seat to win the AFC North. Want to thank all the people here at the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. This was awesome. If you can still stop by for the next couple of hours, help donate to the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, either with a monetary donation or some non-perishable food items. You can also donate online, pittsburghfoodbank.org/need. You can also just text the word need, N-E-E-D, to 50155. Again, a thank you to the General Jeff Patton for being so gracious this morning and this afternoon.
Thank you, General.
A thank you to everybody here that stopped in and said hello and helped donate as well. A thank you to our guy Austin Bechtold for setting us up and, you know, keeping us afloat out here. All the folks that joined in on the conversation, a thank you to Sean Myers behind the glass. And a thank you to Amy Mock for stepping in and making
good
some picks,
Amy.
There for
first,
Joe
first,
Starkey.
First time on the fan.
Really?
Pretty sure.
Historical
How'd
moment.
How'd it go?
I was really nervous at first, but thanks for letting me play.
The PM team is next on 93.7 The Fan, signing off from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry.
Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That's where we find Pirates insider from the Post-Gazette, Jason Mackey, fresh off of the winter meetings. Pirates didn't come away totally empty-handed. They did get Gregory Soto. They did not get Kyle Schwarber. Doesn't sound like they were all that interested in Pete Alonso, who picked another small market team in Baltimore. Now there's reports, Jason, that they're going to possibly trade for Tampa Bay Rays power-hitting infielder Brandon Lau. Do you think this is realistic, or is this another one of those things where we find out the Pirates were close to getting a guy and it doesn't happen?
I think it's realistic, Andrew. I do. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to trade for Brandon Lau, but you're asking me, like, is that in the realm of possibilities or stuff they're going to consider? Yes. I mean, that's a name that I've heard. From the jump with their offseason and stuff that they could do, I think it makes a lot of sense. They've done business before, not good business, mind you.
What would they have to give up, you think?
I mean, honestly, with the Rays, probably lower-level prospects with potential. You know, guys in their top 30, like a Xander Muth is a really good, you know, I don't want to say really good, but, you know, projectable pitcher, somebody in their top 30. I don't think they'd have to give up an Ashcraft or a Chandler. I think that's sort of the big ticket thing. Maybe a Mike Burrows if they're interested in that sort of thing. I mean,
well,
they've got to
make
talent.
That trade then. I agree. Know Tampa Bay is, you know, has fleeced teams on trades and
the
whatnot.
The Pirates specifically.
Yes, with Archer. But if that's yes. all it's going to take to get a guy that has hit 30-plus home runs multiple times in his career, even if he only has 1 year left on his contract, you make
Jason,
that trade.
Jason, that I admit right. – I admit, Jason, that Pony bringing up, like, if that's all it takes, that your projected ask by the Rays does surprise me because I know all the details surrounding Lau and why he wouldn't necessarily command a king's ransom, but that still doesn't seem like – I guess that just doesn't seem like a commensurate return for a guy that plays a middle infield position. And I know he's, you know, he's sort of a one-dimensional player in that he hits for a ton of power and doesn't do a lot else, like, great, but power is power. That's 31 home runs last year.
I know. And it's on an expiring deal. I mean, that's sort of why the price, I don't want to call it discounted, but why I think they could get it done. He's also, you know, OPS under 800. He's been above 800 before in his career, but it was 785 last year. I mean, here's how I look at that, guys. I mean, one, it fits what they need, a guy that can put the ball over the fence. And I don't think it's an exorbitant ask. And I do think they have, you know, stuff that the Rays typically like, where you're talking about highly projectable prospects at the lower levels. Like, that's the kind of stuff that can get this done, and the Pirates have enough of that. That's why I think Lau is, and you know, you get him here, and then maybe you work on a contract. I don't know, but that lines up as something that makes a lot of sense for them.
After leaving the winter meetings and all the scuttlebutt that went on there regarding the Pirates, are you more or less convinced that they're going to sign a big-name free agent?
Can you define big name free agent?
The
for
fact
me?
That you just are asking
before
this,
I
right?
say something.
Hold on. The fact that you're asking this and there was a heavy sigh there, Jason, tells me all I need to know. Like, I would lean well, the little needle seems to go towards the red no portion of the scale here.
I want to know how you guys would define
a $30 million a year player.
No, I don't think they're going to sign a $30 million a year player.
How about 25?
But I don't think that makes sense for them. Like, they have to do other things before they can get there. I don't see why a $25 million a year player would sign with the Pirates.
Because and they're offering the guy maybe $25 million and maybe everybody else is offering $20?
Maybe. Maybe. I feel like they have to do other things to work up to that. They have to give a guy a reason to come to Pittsburgh. I mean, more realistic options for them are via trade. Brandon Lau is one of them. Jorge Polanco is another guy that they've been interested in, that there was some scuttlebutt about him in Orlando, and I think he would make a lot of sense. But he's not going to be a $20 million a year player. At least I don't think so. Eugenio Suarez, I've seen projections. I mean, that's somebody they really like as well. Is he going to get $20 million? I think probably not. I think it probably skews a little bit more toward 15. I think signing those guys, that's realistic. But I hesitate to call those guys
Jason,
a big name free agent.
Go wait ahead. A minute. Hold. Do you think it's realistic if they could get all three of those guys? Because if they did, that's a hell of an offseason. If you think they could sign Polanco, Suarez, and trade for Lau, now I do take them seriously.
I don't think they could do all three, but I think two out of three is plausible, yes. And I would very much take them seriously if they did it. If they got two of those three, man, I'd sign up for that.
Just humor me for a second, because this is neither here nor – it is kind of here or there. Why do you say – like, what is the genesis of you saying they have to work up to something like a $30 million a year type player? Why can't you just go out and say, screw it, Pete Alonso's 31 years old and can hit the ball over the fence in any park he plays in because he's got true, like – light tower power, yeah, we'll pay him $31 million a year to come play first base. We don't even care if he brings a shovel to the field with him instead of a glove.
Well, that's good. Because they have choices. Because Pete Alonso is going to look at this situation critically. Let's take Kyle Schwarber, for instance. Like, when the Pirates make their offer, they don't just, like, fold something on a piece of paper across the table like they're in Moneyball. Like, the Pirates present what they're doing to these players. And by all accounts, everything I heard, like, the Pirates are handling themselves very well, and they're explaining what they're doing in the vision that they have for themselves. But at the end of the day, like, they have not won. And if you have a player who's that good, chances are they want to prioritize winning. So even Jorge Polanco, they're going to have to go to him and explain to him, look, here's A, B, C, and D. This is what we're going to do. And chances are a player who is making $30 million a year, he's probably more accustomed to playing for a big market team. Or he has an employer that, you know, in Schwarber's case, that wants him back. So those guys aren't really looking for jobs. They have a very competitive market, and so the Pirates are going to have to separate themselves. Yes, I agree with you that, I mean, they're telling us by offering Schwarber over $30 million a year that they're capable of paying that money. That's great, but you need to find a match. The player has a choice, too, and I'm not saying they're always going to shove aside the Pirates, but you need to prove yourself to them.
Why weren't they even – because my theory here is, Jason, with the way some of the news has leaked out about them this offseason, that if they were in on Alonso making an offer, we would have absolutely heard about it, because that's been part of the theme here. Why weren't they in on Alonso? What did they not want to do – why did they not want to do business with him when they were at least theoretically willing to do it with Schwarber?
I know, Chris. I was a little bit surprised by that. I'm speculating here. I mean, maybe they're operating on intel that Alonso wouldn't be interested in coming to Pittsburgh. I know.
Make
Boris
him say no is what yet. Fair. That's fair I enough. Know. Make him say no, though. Make it like publicly known. Like, hey, we offered this money to this guy. He's younger than Schwarber. He's, if you go by WAR, in a much shorter career, better than Schwarber. We make him say no publicly. Make it known that you said, oh yeah, 5 years, 150 is what we'll give you, $30 million a year.
I agree with you. Although if you're going to criticize them making things publicly known at this point, that's the one thing they've done this offseason. We know that they're interested or they're prepared to spend money.
So did I. And the reason I'm kind of like, you know, gnawing at this kind of point here is, if you're in on Schwarber, who's basically a DH, you should be in on a guy that, even though he doesn't play first base all that well, he's not JT Snow over there. You're not asking him to be. He's younger. He's got probably close to equivalent power. He hits a lot of oppo home runs, so him being right-handed at PNC wouldn't matter. And just the silence on that front, like, baffled me, even if it is that they knew he wouldn't want to come here. Who cares? Make him the offer anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff's just tricky with Boris, man. Like, whether it gets out or not, strategy of it, and you know, I understand the team. I just, the way that went down was just kind of funky, and it makes me think there was something maybe back channeled with the Orioles. But again, I don't know. I'm agreeing with you, Chris. I don't have a magical answer for why it didn't leak out.
All right, Jason, we'll talk again next week, and maybe by then the Pirates have made a big move. Thank you.
Let's hope. Good talk, guys. Thanks.